Welcome to Worker Movement, a podcast dedicated to the working class, a podcast dedicated to raising class consciousness. This podcast is for you, for us, for the worker.
The United Kingdom approved the Pfizer and BioNTech mRNA-based vaccine earlier this week. The FDA seems likely to follow in the coming days. Given the apparent effectiveness of a vaccine, and for the purposes of this episode, we'll assume any vaccine is effective. Who should get it first? Or to frame the question more generally, given scarce resources, who should receive priority access to a vaccine?
This is the order, according to the CDC. First, the vaccine will go to rich people, then white people, and strippers in South Florida get a third. Next, that guy on the skateboard with the cranberry juice.
Notice Kimball didn't say ocean spray, it was cranberry juice. All joking aside, the CDC formally documented their prioritization criteria on December 1st. The CDC's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, acronymed as ACIP, or ACIP, stated that once approval is granted, vaccination in the initial phase of the COVID-19 vaccination program, Phase 1A, should be offered to both healthcare personnel and residents of long-term care facilities. The ACIP considered four groups to possibly recommend for early COVID-19 vaccination if supply is limited: healthcare personnel, workers in essential and critical industries, people at high risk for severe COVID-19 illness due to underlying medical conditions, and people 65 years of age and older. These four groups were derived from four goals: decrease death and serious disease as much as possible, preserve functioning of society, reduce the extra burden the disease is having on people already facing disparities, and increase the chance for everyone to enjoy health and well-being. Based on these formal CDC recommendations, what do you think of this criteria?
I think it's a weird criteria because it makes no sense to me in the way that they're rationing it, because it doesn't seem like it's really analytical, right? You want to decrease death and serious disease as much as possible. That's fine. I mean, that makes a lot of good sense to me because that's the goal of a vaccine. Preserve a functioning society, I'm not exactly sure what that means. It's just lip service to probably the anti-maskers or something that say, you know, we want school back and something, or the I don't want to wear a mask to a restaurant. Whatever they're saying is a functioning society. But again, I don't know what that really is, because right now a functioning society is people go to work, make money for the capitalists, and then go home to their family after working 12-hour days. So I really don't know what that is.
Is preserve functioning of society more framed as an economic thing, or is it more framed as a law and order thing?
I think it's both. I think it gives lip service to both the capitalist class who want to make sure that frontline workers go back to work so they can get their, you know, money from selling subs to people. And then also the people that are afraid that the riots in the streets or something, society's going to break down, they're going to have to get their guns out and start shooting people, I guess. Because I really don't know what a functioning society is beyond that. Because if you take a look at what we're doing, we're already going out, we're just wearing a mask. Kids are already in school. I don't know what's not functioning about society at this moment besides, you know, disparities that already exist.
So from a governmental policy perspective, is it really in the CDC's purview to define and uphold what functioning of society means? It just seems really odd to me.
It's a really odd statement, and it's so, I don't even know, just vacuous. It doesn't mean anything. It's as if somebody said, we're going to throw it in here to make people happy. I don't know why, quite honestly, but they're going to. And again, as a functioning society, I don't know what they're getting at. I mean, you still take your Ubers, right? So I guess I don't know what they're talking about. And the third one, reduce the extra burden the disease is having on people already facing disparities. It's as if the CDC wants to, like, end poverty and hunger.
Through a vaccine. Is not widely available.
The only way that makes sense is if they're conflating the idea that if you're poor, you can choose which 80 hours a week you work in order to feed your family by being a frontline worker and getting the vaccine. Because anybody else, there's no real disparity there. I mean, it doesn't make any sense in this group of people, because over 65, the majority of them are going to get that. They belong to the class that can pay for private, you know, housing.
Like, the very fact that you are alive after the age of 65 puts you in a certain demographic class of marginally well off, to the extent that you can't afford healthcare to persist you to the age of 65.
Absolutely. Because with the people that make it past 65, the reason why they're so conservative is they've had access to affordable health care, which I hate that term, access to health care, or access to food or dental, or, you know, even a nice car or a nice house or a beach house. They've had access to everything that you can dream of, and that's allowed them to survive. They haven't had to work in a mine. They don't have, you know, coal lung, or they call it minor lung,
black lung.
Black lung. There you go. Thank you. That they don't have to worry about getting disease from drinking contaminated water and Flint. They don't have to worry about anything, and that's why they're over the age of there, and that's why they want to preserve what they currently have, which is a system that allows them and their family to persist.
We want to preserve the functioning society.
For them, basically. Yeah, yeah. And then the final, the increase the chance for everyone to enjoy health and well-being, that's fucking bonkers. That's basically saying we want our kids to be able to go back and watch Big Ten football in the stadiums. I don't know what else that is, because what does it mean to enjoy health and well-being? You're not going to... You're not going to create a UBI, which is a neoliberal piece of shit idea, but the closest thing we have is this idea of paying, you know, in UBI, but you're not going to go and end capitalism. You're not going to be able to actually make everybody enjoy healthcare, or health and well-being. That's insane.
And UBI is universal basic income, which is the idea that every month or something like that, you would just receive money from the government.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. The best idea would be that you get $65,000 a year or something, and you pay for everything, I guess, out of that. It's basically inflation.
So the idea of increasing the chance for everyone to enjoy health and well-being is, I think, completely misguided, given that the presence of a vaccine would not accelerate any sort of increase in quality of life. It would simply be a return to the previous state of quality,
yes.
which is a neoliberal hellscape. So I'm not sure how providing access to a vaccine increases the chance for everyone. It's more like it diminishes the current decrease. It's a very odd framing of what the vaccine actually intends to do, which is, I think, functionally prevent death.
The vaccine is meant to get us to a spot, I believe, that allows capitalists to be happy.
Preserve the functioning of society.
Yes, and it's designed to reduce the amount of panic associated with it. And not the panic as in we're all afraid we're going to die, but the panic as in the Karens showing up and being assholes about, you know, the fact that you're making them wear a mask inside of a store because it's their God-given right to never have to wear one again for some reason. In reality, what I think it is that this is a government that was unequipped to actually provide a vaccine because they rely too heavily on corporations to provide something. Because it didn't seize the means of production. And now they have to come up with the reason why they are, you know, handing out the vaccines in a certain way. And because the majority of people don't actually pay attention to the news, the squeakiest wheel gets the most, you know, grease, as dumb as that cliche is. And that happens to be the healthcare frontlines who deserve that. They actually do. But also the over 65 or 80 who, I guess, voted for Trump.
This CDC recommendation effectively boils down to a determination of who will get the vaccine and who will not. On August 7, 2019, Sarah Palin famously defined the term death panel in a Facebook post, which said the following, and this is a direct quote, "Government healthcare will not reduce the cost. It will simply refuse to pay the cost. And who will suffer the most when they ration care? The sick, the elderly, and the disabled, of course. The America I know and love is not one in which my parents or my baby with Down syndrome will have to stand in front of Obama's death panel so his bureaucrats can decide based on a subjective judgment of their level of productivity in society," which is in quotes, "whether they are worthy of health care. Such a system is downright evil."
This is some base-ass shit from Sarah Palin. This is like at the level at which you'd expect somebody who was an actual radical thinker who is breaking down the system, which we have in the neoliberal hellscape, to come up with this idea that the reason why there's a fear of death panels is they're not going to choose those that deserve it. They're going to choose the ones that the government believes are the most productive or the ones that they believe deserve it, right? And if we think of politics as the, you know, resource control, and you voted for Trump, you can argue that the people in the nursing homes probably deserve the vaccination because they're the ones that got them in power. I mean, that's a pretty bold argument, but it's a good one. What I get from Sarah Palin is that she doesn't truly actually understand it, but she coined a term that's really important to talk about.
Sarah Palin defines the term death panel, and it's used as the rallying cry for the Tea Party and the right wing during the ACA debate and the Obamacare debate in the late 2000s. So she fundamentally presents a leftist idea that the value of a human being is not tied to their government's assessment of their productivity in society. Everybody should have access to healthcare. This idea was not what the Republicans and the Tea Party were actually arguing on, but they presented a super coherent propaganda scheme that basically killed Obamacare. And we're seeing this again happen, where the CDC is literally making this determination about who should get the vaccine and who shouldn't. And there is death associated with the outcome for certain segments of the population to a greater extent, but there is still death associated with the outcome of this determination. So under Sarah Palin's definition of a death panel, the CDC is a death panel right now. And Sarah Palin's actually right to some extent, because there should not be a death panel. There should not be a determination as to who is more or less worthy of a vaccine. But under capitalism, we have scarce resources, and so this is necessary.
It's interesting because it's always the war cry and the battle cry that communism is the one that has scarcity and the one that has lines and the one that chooses who lives and who dies based on, you know, some government mandate. But in reality, it's capitalism. This government, again, relied on a third party, relied on private companies to create a vaccine. There wasn't enough vaccine created. And now, because the government is the one that has to dole it out, they're creating death panels. I mean, arguably, what they should have done is just said highest bidder gets the first vaccine. I mean, that's basically what it comes down to. And hospitals would have paid for it, because hospitals need frontline workers. And any company that had enough workers that wanted to be called essential workers could have paid more money for it, and you've got the exact same outcome what you have now.
So what they actually chose to do is a prime example of neoliberalism, which is, instead of letting the free market dictate, which is not a neoliberal premise. And the free market example would be literally just having an open bid for it.
Yep.
And you would have hospitals bidding to have vaccines for their employees, their yep. healthcare workers.
Absolutely.
Instead, you're having the government centrally plan who gets the vaccine in an effort to preserve a functioning of society.
Based on what they believe a functioning society is, which is your right to go, if you're a doctor on the front lines or a nurse, to go to work every day and treat dickheads who don't want to wear masks. That's a functioning society. You get to go and still be a slave every single day and treat more people that die a day than 9/11, the last couple days, which, you know, whatever. That number is just to make the Republicans know that they fucking suck. But a functioning society is the fact, again, that you are now a societal slave if you're a healthcare worker or essential worker. Because now you can't. Now you're vaccinated. You have no excuse not to go to work. So thank you for being a frontline worker. You get to work overtime, and we praise you.
Based on the CDC's guidelines for who will get the vaccine first, you just talked about healthcare workers getting it, and now that they're vaccinated, they can be wage slaves forever and ever.
Forever and ever, baby. Thank you.
What will be the functional outcome of these guidelines playing out? So we're going to vaccinate all healthcare workers, and we're going to vaccinate all long-term care facility residents. This fundamentally doesn't change anything.
Not at all.
You're going to see the same number of cases continue to spike, because as you said earlier, the long-term care residents represent a fairly small portion of cases, while they represent a fairly large percentage of the deaths. It seems as though the entire intent of the CDC is perhaps propaganda-based to reduce the death count, in a similar manner as the Vietnam War death count was propaganda. We just want the death count number to go down. We don't want to functionally change the problem.
Exactly. And you talk about, like, you know, if it's 4% of the deaths, well, we just get rid of the people that are dying and we'll call it something else. Now you can die of non-COVID. It's the same idea of not testing, right? Because Trump said that one time, if we don't test, you'll never know the number. That's absolutely true. That's a true statement. If you don't test, we actually won't know how many people have died. And it's very similar to what they're going to do with this. They're just reducing the number of people who are dying. And that's why there's people that have underlying diseases, right? That quote is in there because they really want to cut down on those that die for propaganda. Now, we know that we don't want any more deaths from this. But it doesn't really affect the people that are out given the disease. It doesn't affect the asymptomatic carriers, the ones that are out and about giving the disease away.
So if you're truly committed to reducing the spread and reducing deaths, what should the primary goals of vaccination be? Our main premise is that it should be to save lives. And as part of saving lives, there's kind of two things that need to happen. Is you need to reduce the healthcare resource utilization, which means you have to prevent the spread, which means you have to prevent people from spreading it in their community. And you have to ensure that there's access to basic services. Like, you need water and electricity, and those are kind of hyperbolic, because I don't think very many people are without water and electricity right now.
And not many people actually work in those segments relative to the rest of the population. Right? I mean, you mean water, the water supply is for a whole town is probably managed by, like, three people of the water company. It's not like, it not takes 600 people per 100,000 to do it. It's really like four per 100,000. So it's very small number of people that need to make this work.
So using those two criteria, is there a better way to apply the scarcity of the vaccine to achieve the objective of saving lives versus what the CDC has directed?
I think you give it to the group of people that are the most spoiled, idiotic group of people that are out and about, that go about their lives as if nothing is going on. Now, it may seem counterintuitive, but they're going to do it anyways. And they're going to go out and super spread, regardless what you say to them. So if you get them vaccinated right away, they can go about their lives driving the economy, not giving anybody COVID. They're going to be out there anyways, being Karens, yelling because they can't get the salad bar.
And there's a whole other concern about whether those people are actually going to be receptive to a vaccine.
But yeah, that's different.
From a basic modeling perspective, the goal should be to identify the people that caused the greatest amount of spread of the virus and mitigate their ability to spread.
Yep.
And that will lead to a reduction in deaths, right? That's what the modeling premise should be.
So what it comes down to is, if it's really a model of super spreaders, the individuals that are traveling, you know, talking about the business people that are on planes, right? They're asymptomatic carriers. You have to think everybody's asymptomatic carrier. If that's the case, you model them and you give them the vaccination
first. And we have no idea what the modeling is that would dictate who should get it first. But our general point of view is that the CDC should figure out who is the interconnected super spreader people and prioritize their vaccination, because that will be the greatest impact.
Yep.
Like, how many people are getting COVID from long-term health residents?
I'm going to say zero. They're getting it from somebody else, right?
Right. They're the end of a tree. They're the end of the node.
Yeah. Who should get it then? If you really care about not killing old people, if that's what I mean, old long-term care, it's basically you're going to vaccinate the people around them, which is the healthcare workers that come in and their kids. The 25 to 55-year-olds that are out and about, that drop their kids off to still have outside soccer practice, whatever they're doing, their kids are in school. They're a sandwich generation. You vaccinate them first because they're the spreaders. And then we can argue that, you know, maybe they're not getting it. But if you go and talk to your neighbor without a mask on and they have COVID and you spend 20 minutes talking to them, you're probably going to get COVID. The idea is to cut down the number of chuds that get it and pass it around. The guy that's cutting his lawnmower with the Trump sign in front of his house, that wears the gator over his face, that goes to, you know, Home Depot or Lowe's and ask if they have, like, the special walnut-colored door because he has to match his neighbor's house. That asshole, super spreader. Everything about that guy. Cut him down.
So the basic premise is that instead of vaccinating the long-term care people, you can effectively vaccinate everybody else that interacts with them.
Exactly, yeah. It's super easy to think about that. I mean, the issue is that, is the CDC filled with scientists making the policy and statisticians, or is it filled with appointees?
And the answer is appointees.
Appointees, yeah. The people don't understand simple math. And not that you have to. And when I say simple, I mean, as somebody who has studied deep, deep math, some of the stuff isn't that hard to apply every day. If you are in the CDC, you should understand basic statistics. That's it. I mean, you should be able to run, like, a t-test in your head overnight. That's... And talk about bell-shaped curves as if, like, you know how to model it. You know, is it a population or is it a sample? Like, you should know very simple things like that. And I don't think they do.
The guidance does not express any sort of statistical concept.
At all.
It expresses outcomes for the ruling class.
Absolutely, because it doesn't even talk about, like, the challenges of vaccinating rural America, right? I mean, you talk about, I mean, what they've gotten here is probably the easiest to vaccinate because it's a lazy, lazy report. It's so lazy. I could have came up with this report in my sleep. You basically copy and paste it from the people who are free to travel when you had to have papers back early on. You just grab that same group of people and said, you can go out. And then we're just going to give it to, I guess, the old because they're most vulnerable and the frontline workers because they're the ones that are most exposed. Instead of actually those that are the carriers of it. Because you should be vaccinating those that are propagating the disease, not those that are you think are propagating it. Because again, your 95-year-old great uncle is not going to the deli to get himself a sandwich. That's not happening. He's not super spreading it. It's the guy behind the counter or the guy that just showed up that ordered the sandwich that's giving it to your uncle through whoever goes to get the sandwich for your uncle. That's what's happening.
Right. Your uncle is literally sitting in a 15-foot room, and the yeah. only people that interact with him are going to be the ones that spread it to him.
Yes.
In a long-term care setting.
Yep. Now, it'll spread like a wildfire. We know that. We're not arguing that their deaths need to happen. What we're arguing is that there's other ways to protect them that doesn't involve giving them a shot, which we've seen some really crazy adverse reactions to. I mean, giving somebody a 105-degree fever is not something that should be done lightly. And we've seen that as one of the side effects. So, I mean, think about what the reactions are going to be when the clinical trials are not done on 85-year-olds, by the way. They took 21,000 volunteers.
This is the Pfizer clinical trial where roughly 42,000 people signed up to receive the vaccine, and Pfizer created a placebo group of roughly 21,000 people and a vaccine group of 21,000 people. So only 21,000 people actually received the vaccine.
There was not 21,000 geriatric individuals who showed up and said, yes, please, please give me a shot, even though that I am severely type 1 diabetic and have gout. Like those people did not get a vaccination test. We have no idea what's going to happen to their populations as they start rolling this vaccine out.
There is absolutely some risk for yet unknown side effects among the long-term care demographic. Setting aside that risk, the CDC's criteria is attempting to minimize deaths, which we agree should be the prime operative. The CDC is reacting to the problem of scarcity, a construct of capitalism, and attempting to solve an optimization problem. We believe that economic factors are assigned too much weight in the CDC's criteria. They could minimize deaths with less exploitation, but the presence of exploitation, especially healthcare workers, is a feature of the criteria, not a bug.
Our argument is that there should be no economic pillars for vaccination distribution. The distribution of the vaccine is designed to basically exploit the working class, making them servants. Because again, once you get the vaccination, there's no reason why you can't work. And we've shown again and again and again, under neoliberalism, under capitalism, there is no way it's capable of efficiently distributing something, especially equally, because there's limited resources. And the way they assign it is economically or value. This vaccination is not going to end inequality. In fact, it's going to make it worse, because once the vaccination is in place, we're no longer going to have the talk about stimulus. We're going to go right back to the status quo, which is exactly what they want.
For future episodes and to learn more about the worker movement, join us at workermovement.com.